Hello and welcome to another episode of Rural Voices. Across Europe, we are still in varying degrees of lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic, so we're still making these episodes from our own homes. Back in June, we should have been in Budapest for a training course entitled Rural Learning on the Move, but because of Corona, we can't move anywhere. So instead, the team at Rural Youth Europe put together a webinar on non-formal learning to cover the topics that would have been covered in Budapest. This whole situation is such a huge learning opportunity for all of us to find new ways to educate and interact with the members of our organisations. So it's the perfect time to be talking about new forms of learning. In this episode, we hear some highlights from the webinar, as well as some reflections from a couple of the participants. Here is what we've got coming up.
This is a comment that I hear so often doing trainings myself, is that I feel so empowered. Their attitudes are changing on the topic, not just because they know, but because they feel or they have experienced the topic itself.
And we are targeting different learning styles that the participants might have and combinations of different learning styles, because nobody is truly just a listener and nobody really learns only by listening or only by visual meanings. I mean, that's a myth.
We decided to do, we called it an international Corona chat, and it will be organized like a living library, and we will do it via Zoom.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. If you don't know what non-formal education is, prepare to learn.
Okay, so that was kind of weird. The truth is, I don't really know how to start these things, so it is what it is. Anyway, as Dan mentioned, the topic of this episode is non-formal education. And this is actually a topic I kind of feel well informed about because I do come from a 4-H background, and if you've done any 4-H activities or went to any 4-H events, you're kind of bound to encounter non-formal education. Just because one of the main principles of 4-H is learning by doing, and learning by doing is also one of the more popular non-formal education methods. So at first, I just kind of assumed that's something everyone knows, but as I went through life, I kind of would sometimes end up in these conversations when I mention non-formal education and the other person goes, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. But when you think about it, it does kind of make sense because most people experience education at schools, universities, and so on, where you do have this teacher-student dynamic, sort of the communication is going one way and you're just taking notes and so on. And you just assume that's what education is. Therefore, I was happy to learn that Rural Youth Europe was doing a webinar on non-formal education and what it is, how it differs from formal education or informal education, which I don't think I even mentioned before. The fact is that I've been kind of babbling around for 2 minutes now, just throwing out terms without really explaining them. And the reason for that is that I just know that there are people who can do it better. And two such people are Frederick and Andrea. Frederick also comes from a 4-H background and he's an experienced trainer. I met him a few times and he always had this notebook with him where he just collected icebreakers and non-formal education methods. So I feel that he probably has some very good insights on what non-formal education is. And during the webinar, he was joined by Andrea from the Swedish National Agency of Youth and Civil Society, which through grants and trainings try to make sure that young people are being educated both in the classroom and outside it. So I'm just gonna let them do their thing and let you to soak up the knowledge.
Quite a few people are already doing non-formal education. Quite a few people have probably heard of the term non-formal education beforehand, but it's a little bit nebulous. It's a little bit vague. Like, oh, non-formal education is this, but it's not that. Or I have an idea of what non-formal education is, but I'm not sure. And for this is why we have invited Andrea to talk with me specifically about this topic.
I think it's easier to understand non-formal education when we understand it in the context of formal education, non-formal education, and informal education. So the formal education is the one that happens at school. It's easier to give this as an example. It happens at school. It's very structured. It has very clear learning objectives. You have very clear learning times. you have learning support, you get a certificate at the end of it. So this is formal education, and it happens in this very formal structure, in the informal environment. The non-formal learning, it is also structured. There are also learning objectives in non-formal learning, but it usually happens outside of the classical school or the classical training institutions. But it has clear objectives and is intentional. That there is a point with what you're doing in this non-formal education. There is something behind it. There is a thought, there is a learning objective. And something that is also very important for the non-formal education is that it's very participative and very interactive. So it is based on the so-called non-formal education methods that you might have heard a lot of times. And these non-formal education methods, they are highly based on interaction and on participants' participation, active participation.
Non-formal learning, which is what this webinar is about, it's where rather than having a teacher, you're having a facilitator, and then rather than having students, you're having participants who are sharing their own experiences. And the facilitator, while also might be expert on the topic, is more focused on making sure the process is conducive for learning rather than teaching. And finally, we have this very important bit that Andrea was talking quite a lot about, which is self-assessment and evaluation, and also focusing on the needs, adapting the program, adapting the activity to fit the needs of the participants, rather than having a strict schedule or a strict curriculum that you're adhering to.
So what Frederick and Andrea are saying there is that non-formal learning has clear learning objectives, but is far greater focused on the process of learning, with participation and interactivity at the centre of the project. Crucially, what is being taught reflects the needs and the interests of the participants involved. Now we know what non-formal education is, Frederick and Andrea then went on to discuss why and when we want to use these non-formal methods of learning.
So the one big reason you wanted to choose non-formal learning rather than formal learning is if you want to focus on the process rather than on the outcomes. And this is the, while you are also focusing on process in formal education and you're also focusing on outcomes in non-formal education, it's this distinction between the curriculum versus the participants' needs that we wanted to highlight here. If you want to, like, in order for you to operate a tractor, you need to be able to do, like, be able to operate a tractor. You need to know how to start a tractor. You need to know how to stop a tractor. You need to make sure that you know how powerful the thing is so you don't accidentally break the motor and stuff like this. There, formal education makes a lot of sense because there are some requirements that you need to fulfill in order to be able to, both functionally, but also in many places legally, operate a tractor. Whereas if the outcome is more focused on, say you want to learn how to croquet or you want to knit, where you start, let's say you want to be able to make a scarf. Unless you want to work on this commercially, there's not necessarily a need for you to have a specific skill level at the end of an activity. It's more conducive for your learning to start wherever you are, and then as the activity progresses, get feedback and change the topic or change how the learning is taking place over the course of you learning how to knit a scarf. That is two examples where process instead of outcomes.
I would like to add the variety of the methods that are used in non-formal education. So by using such different approaches to learning, we make it highly active, and we are targeting different learning styles that the participants might have and combinations of different learning styles, because nobody is truly just a listener and nobody really learns only by listening or only by visual meanings. I mean, that's a myth. But we are managing to target several learning styles of the participants through such non-formal education methods. And the fact that there are so many, it also helps us to have results when it comes to development of social skills, of soft skills, people skills, communication skills, and so on. So there are different skills that we are improving when we are getting active and we are doing learning by doing and a much more hands-on approach to learning. than just sitting there and listening.
Another point that's very, like, why you want to use non-formal learning is because you want to change attitudes and you want to empower the participants. Oftentimes, participants who are new to non-formal learning, often, like, this is a comment that I hear so often doing trainings myself, is that I feel so empowered. Like, they use the same, but they've also used different words to describe how their attitudes are changing on the topic. Not just because they know, but because they feel or they have experienced the topic itself. Say it's about, about learning how they can actually use their hands, or they actually now know how discrimination feels like, so they're better at spotting it during, like, when they're going about in their daily lives. Things like this. That's a very strong reason to choose non-formal learning rather than a formal approach. Specifically these topics of interpersonal relationships, like inclusion, empowerment, participation. These type of topics are very, very conducive to non-formal education.
Thank you, Frederick and Andrea. We were so lucky to have them involved in the webinar because, as you can tell, they know what they're talking about. And I think that's made it really clear what non-formal learning is and why we use it. Right, next we're going to hear from someone that participated in the webinar. We've got a bit of a Rural Youth Europe legend on, Emma from 4-H Finland. I first met Emma in Latvia at the rally in 2017 and then again in Helsinki last December for the evaluation session. So I was really keen to get Emma on to give her thoughts on the webinar. Take it away, Emma.
Thanks, Dan. Hi, guys. My name is Emma, and I'm from Finland, so I'm a member of 4-H Finland. I attended the webinar on non-formal learning, so for me it was interesting to hear new perspectives and get more information on that, but also to hear the differences between non-formal and formal learning. There was this one topic about digital platforms and how the youth is already online. Has been quite a while now. So it's been great to see how my own organization is following them there, especially now when the whole lockdown is going on and every event and activities are cancelled. So for example, we have had online courses and our forest clubs are online. We have had Instagram lives. So the activities are still going on. The 4-H reacted really fast on the whole COVID-19 situation, and it's been really amazing to see. Also, there was this one tip that I remember that I probably will be needing that later on because I'm starting to become a teacher. So it was about whenever you're having an online activity, for example, webinar or a lesson or whatever, it would be good if you have an IT person there too, just to check that everything is working. And if there are some problems during the session, that person would have the time and the energy to handle the whole problem. So I will keep that in mind for the future. And it was also quite nice to notice how many activities we have that uses non-formal learning. For example, 4-H clubs, there are mostly for children for aged 6 to 13. So in the clubs they do handicrafts, cooking, games, different kind of things. So it's not only the thing that they learn to do, but they also learn teamwork and cleaning up your own mess and waiting for your turn. So that's all non-formal learning. And the clubs are based on the kids and on their pace and in the clubs, and they can be their self. There's also another good example. It's this 4-H enterprise. You can establish it when you're 13 years old, and even though we have a course on it, and of course that's formal learning, but the actual enterprise is non-formal learning because it's based on your activity and what you want to do and on your pace to do it. So For example, I had a summer cafe as a 4-H enterprise. And of course, well, I learned baking and selling my own products, but I also learned about marketing, payroll, my incomes and expenses, how to count them. So basically how to keep the whole business together. And that's a really great example on one activity that uses non-formal learning. And of course you have a mentor there during the whole journey, so you're not alone, but still. So yeah, I think that's about it. Thanks for having me here and have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much, Emma, for that. It was great to hear how Finnish 4-H is already on top of the game in regards to non-formal learning. I've heard about 4-H Enterprise quite a few times over the last few years. I think it's such a great scheme and something that other organisations should definitely think about doing something similar if they haven't already. It was also brilliant to hear that Emma found the webinar useful, not just in relation to her 4-H projects, but also as she starts her career as a teacher. So we definitely send her our best wishes with that. And thanks again, Emma, for sharing your thoughts here on the podcast. Right, next up, I got to speak to Barbara, who works in the office for Landjugend Austria. It was great speaking to her. I now work in the office for Devon Young Farmers here in England, and I'm now myself facing the challenge of creating an online programme for our members during COVID. So I can certainly relate to a lot of what Barbara has to say, and will definitely be stealing some of her great ideas.
Hello, I'm Barbara. I come from Austria, and my home organisation is Landjugend Austria. And there I'm working in the office as the International Programme Coordinator.
So what made you want to sign up for our webinar on non-formal learning?
I originally planned to attend the seminar of Rural Youth Europe in Budapest in June, but it was cancelled because of COVID-19. And then I realized that Rural Youth Europe is organising a webinar on non-formal learning methods. And I decided to attend it because in our home organization, we had a lot of online seminars, webinars, and I wanted to learn about new methods to make our seminars more attractive for our members. And I wanted to widen my knowledge about non-formal learning methods, because my first deeper steps into non-formal learning methods were in Latvia in 2017. There I attended the Grand Prep meeting, and we had so many great and inspiring sessions about non-formal learning methods and how to use them and what is the best one for this content. And on the other hand, I also wanted to see how Rural Youth Europe is organizing a webinar to get inspired for our webinars or online seminars that we are organizing.
So what did you learn from the webinar? Was there anything that stood out that was particularly interesting or helpful?
Oh yes, I learned a lot. For example, Jamboard. This was very inspiring for me. We used it in the beginning because we had to choose one picture to show our current mood. And in the end, it was used for giving feedback, and I thought it is a very good way to communicate anonymously. Yeah, so I love the Jamboard. There was also a Greek guest speaker, and I loved to listen to his ideas, because he was talking about what is the maximum duration for a webinar. And like, it was about 2 or 2.5 hours, and it is a long time to sit in front of a computer or a laptop, and you need to have breaks. That is important. During the breaks, the participants, the listeners, should be able to stretch their body, to get some water to drink,
to go to the bathroom that is important. And what can I do during a break? I think it's not that nice if the participants see an empty seat, and I thought it's a good idea to put on the logo or the flyer of the event, so that those who are still sitting in front of the laptop can see it. And the Greek man, sorry I forgot his name, said it's also a good idea to use music, to put on some music during breaks, during reflection sessions. And I thought that's a very good idea to get or to bring the participants into a relaxing mood and into a chill modus. Yeah. And I learned that it's very important to have an extra person for technical stuff. You need one person that is moderating it and an extra person for technical stuff, and you should always have a backup plan or a plan B if anybody is offline or if you have unwanted breaks. That is one thing that is very important to consider. And I also learned that it is very important to communicate in the beginning to the participants, hey everybody, you are responsible for your own outcome, so take the most out of the webinar and take the chance and be active. That's very important to mention in the beginning, I thought.
Yes, some great tips there for people organising online webinars. And a bit of a shout out to the Greek man that you referred to. That was Konstantinos, and he brought lots of great tips for non-formal learning in the digital space. So if anyone wants to watch back the webinar, that's definitely something to look out for. So Barbara, can you think of any non-formal learning projects that have been carried out in your own organisation?
So yes, there are coming some non-formal learning projects into my mind. For example, we have a youth exchange every year. It is somehow similar to the Rural Youth Europe seminars, but our participants are younger. They are aged between 14 and 18 years, and it's during the summertime. So the students have holidays, and it's a challenge. So in the morning we have two sessions where the participants are talking about different topics, and it's important to not be like a teacher and to use different non-formal learning methods. This is the one thing. And the second thing is when the leaders of the local organizations are elected, they need some support, they need some help to lead the local organization. And we are offering trainings, we are offering seminars. For example, it is done on a weekend, and there we have trainers, and they are doing different team building activities. And on the one hand, it is good to get to know other leaders, and on the other hand, it is important to show them what is your role in your organization, how can you motivate your members, and how can you improve during the whole time.
And finally, have you got anything lined up as something that you're offering your members online during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yes, we are planning a non-formal learning activity. As I said in the beginning, I'm the international program coordinator of Landjugend Austria, and originally we have planned to an excursion to China. We had to cancel it. We also had to cancel the youth exchange. And then we discussed it in a board meeting. How can we bring the world, how can we bring Europe to Austria, how can we organize international activities? And then we decided to do, we called it an international Corona chat, and it will be in about 2 weeks. And I'm very happy that I found four speakers, so four young ladies from Finland, Ireland, Switzerland and Italy. And it will be organized like a living library, and we will do it via Zoom. And there will be four separated rooms. In each room is one speaker, and all in all we will have 20 listeners. So in each room there will be one speaker and five listeners. And it should be a very nice chat about the corona time in each country, and to listen to Finland. How was it there? Did you have any challenges? Did it change your daily life? And it should be a nice talk and a nice exchange. And the goal is to create understanding for other countries' situations. And I'm very excited about it, and I'm really looking forward to it. And yeah, I love to organize it.
Well, thank you, Barbara, for sharing all of that with us, and good luck with the International Living Library. Sounds amazing. Let us know how you get on.
Thank you, Barbara, for sharing your learning outcomes from the webinar. What I find interesting is that some of the main things Barbara really picked up on were all related to the use of non-formal education in an online environment. Obviously, this is very topical right now with COVID-19 and everything. And it's very nice to hear that the information she obtained during the webinar will be put to good use very soon, as Landjugend Austria will be doing their own non-formal education activities online. Now, regardless of whether it's taking place in an online or offline environment, there are a few things that can either make or break the activity. And that's why we're circling back to Frederick, who's going to share a few tips on how to better manage non-formal education activities. These will really come in handy for potential organizers and facilitators to deliver high quality content, but I think that they will also prove useful to participants to better manage their expectations. Let's just see what Frederick has got for us.
So the first tip that we have for you is to ensure that participants are aware of their responsibility. If you remember from previously when we were talking about why to do non-formal education, one of the very important parts was that participants are responsible for their own learning, especially participants who are not experienced with non-formal learning. They won't necessarily know this, and therefore it's very important for you as a person who organizes activities like this to make them aware. Use activities that give them the chance to take responsibility themselves also. That's also a very good idea, especially in the beginning of an activity. If there are more than one workshop, or say it's a whole day or a whole week or a longer period of time, especially in the beginning, give them the tools so they can take care of their or take responsibility for their own learning. The next tip that we have is related to also what Constance was talking about previously, about how to, you need to be very prepared when you're doing non-formal educational activities in digital space. But this also takes, it also is required when you do it in physical space, that since everything is planned, so you take into account the needs of the participants. It's also important to know, for everyone involved in the training activity to be aware of what's happening so they can take over if needed, and plan out many scenarios, especially have backup plans. Like, say you have this plan that you want to do this particular activity, but it requires at least requires maximum of 30 people, and then all of a sudden your activity goes very popular and now you have 50 people, and what do you do then? It's important to take into account these things, and this is something that requires a lot of experience when you do activities or non-formal educational activities. And the more you do it, the more experience you will be knowing what scenarios to plan for. But it's important to be aware that very rarely the thing go exactly as you plan. This is the case for many things that you plan, and it's especially the case with teaching, especially when you have a group where you don't necessarily know everybody super well. And so things might be taking much longer than expected or much shorter than expected. And it's important to adjust as you go. Then, as a trainer, this is specifically important as if you're the person who is facilitating, not that much when you're planning it necessarily, but try to, what I wrote here is like, try to inject as little opinions and ideas as possible from the perspective of the facilitator. And this goes slightly against the way that you would do in a formal setting with a teacher where you are the expert and you are responsible for all the knowledge and you need to share all of this. It's often a better approach, in my opinion, when doing non-formal education, to actually try and take a step back and try and let the participants themselves share the information. When you are a facilitator, you have some responsibility and some authority being responsible for the how the activity is flowing. And therefore, it's better to just be aware of the process and try to let participants share the knowledge. You, of course, know most of the opinions and most of the ideas since you have been planning the activity, most likely. But learning becomes much more stronger when it's the participants are sharing it with themselves. You can, of course, help them. You can, of course, give some ideas, give some hints, some suggestions. But the learning is much stronger when it takes place between the participants. You need to incorporate many different learning styles. Non-formal education is a very wide field. There are many approaches to the same topic. And since people learn in different ways, some people are learn very much by using their hands. Some people need to hear things. Some people need to see things. Some people need to think their way through things. And using many different ways of approaching a learning topic gives you the, make sure that more people are able to engage with the topic. And then the final point that we have is to use participants as a resource for learning. This ties back into the idea that participants often know many of the points. And say you have a participant that already knows a lot about the topic. You can use that. You can give them some more responsibility. You can say, oh, I see that you already know a lot of this. Would you be comfortable maybe sharing more of this, more of the knowledge that you already have? Maybe you want to help facilitate this particular bit. That way, the participant gets to push themselves and it's you don't have to like fight them necessarily. You know what? You probably have, if you've done a lot of these activities, you've probably already met some participants who are slightly disruptive because they are bored. Because they basically know all that you're saying. So using them, telling them that, hey, you can actually help out here. You can become better learning about this topic by giving them more responsibility or giving them different tasks that can help out so that people can grow is a way to using the participants and changing how you approach the activity based on the needs.
Thank you, Frederick, for sharing these tips. I think this is a really good way to end the episode. But just to recap on the last half an hour, I think we learned quite a lot. We now know what non-formal education is and how it differs from formal and informal education. We also heard some feedback from Emma and Barbara on some of the learning outcomes from the webinar, as well as some of the ways that non-formal education methods are used in Rural Youth Europe's member organizations. I think the two really good examples are the 4-H enterprises mentioned by Emma and the upcoming online non-formal activity, which will be organized by Landjugend Austria. And finally, we developed a really good checklist for people organizing non-formal education activities. In short, what you have to do is make sure that the participants know what to expect, be well prepared and have backup plans, so you have to have some flexibility. You should also avoid imposing your own opinion on the participants. Instead, let them to arrive at their own conclusions. In order to engage the majority of the participants, you should incorporate as many different learning styles as possible. And finally, use participants for learning by giving them more responsibility. Every participant comes with their own background, and this can be very useful for other participants to better understand the subject. Now, with that being said, I would like to thank again Frederick, Andrea, Emma, and Barbara for sharing their experiences of non-formal education with us during this episode. If you want to learn more about non-formal education, I would like to really encourage you to go to Rural Youth Europe's YouTube page and to check out the webinar Ready, Scroll, Learn, because the webinar included so much more information that we did not cover during this episode, and it will really give you a full picture of what non-formal education is. To finish off, don't forget to follow Rural Youth Europe on all the social media platforms not to miss our next episode, as well as many other exciting things coming up in a very near future. As always, stay safe, and we'll be back very soon with more rural voices from across Europe.
You are listening to Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.